It's hot and cold. Good morning. That was auspicious, wasn't it? Hey, it's May. It doesn't seem like May. It seems like late winter. Although we're getting there. The prediction is May was going to be colder than normal, because what that means for you out there in Radio Land and me sitting here in the studio when I leave and go out there into Radio Land is summer is going to be really hot, because it's going to average out. It always averages out. Nature averages for the most part. Or it's going to be warmer. I'm not. Anyway, I don't. It's not snowing. Although we had some snow and sleet last week. Just, you know, because God loves us. That's what it's got to be, huh? So this has been one heck of a week. I say that every week, and I guess I just live heck-filled weeks is what's going on. Last Saturday, I left the radio station, went home, took my nap, went to work. Pete could have lunch. And I had a project, and all these projects are interwoven, interlinked. They dovetail together somehow. So this project was put the dryer vent in. Now I had a dryer vent. We've been living there for, I don't know, 6 weeks, whatever the heck it's been. And I'd put in a temporary dryer vent, you know, the kind that vents inside, has a little pool of water and the catches the lint when it comes out, and I've always hated those things, and I still hate them. It was like $20, and it was stupid, and it just filled the place up with humidity, and we left all the doors open and to dissipate the humidity so it wasn't concentrated in this one little laundry room. So, and my wife had been lamenting the fact that the clothes were taking longer to dry, which is now causing more electricity. So I ordered the vent for outside that seals effectively. I found the one I wanted. And it has to go through an outside wall. Now, the dryer's on an inside wall. It's not on the outside wall, because the washer dryer are next to each other, because that's the way God wants it to be. So I'd gotten a tight elbow to go down through the floor so the dryer could be relatively close to the wall. I did that hole in the floor first, and that went okay. That was pretty quick. I have a 4 1/8 inch hole saw, and I did the hole in the floor, and it was not a – I anticipate great problems in doing this kind of stuff. And it was easy. The subfloor wasn't that thick. And anyway, so now I'm into the basement. And I've got to go out through the sidewall from the basement, which means basically you're going through some kind of a sill. Now, this is an 1860s house. So, boys and girls, here's the quiz this morning. What kind of a sill do you think that would be? It would be a band of a 2x, a double 2x? No. It's a big honking piece of wood. And I don't know how thick it is. I did drill a pilot hole, but the inside of the wall has been spray foamed, and the pilot hole drill, I don't know, it's a foot long, and it didn't come through. It came through into the foam. I didn't know where. I said, okay, I know where I want to put it. Start cutting, Tom. And I commenced to cutting. And the hole saws I have a whole set of them because, you know, you could use a recip saw and it's just a mess. It looks stupid. It looks like you don't know what you're doing. Not that I know what I'm doing, but it looks a little more professional if you got a hole saw, proper size hole saw. And I got the Milwaukee, some kind of something wood buster or something hole saw. And it's a great saw. I start drilling and I'm into it maybe, I don't know, 3-4 inches. And the bit's getting kind of dull. The hole saw's getting kind of dull because I've used it a lot over the years. And I was using a cordless drill to start out. I'm going to kill this drill. So I went and got my big mother Metabo impact hammer drill. And I hook up to that, and I continue drilling. I'm like, you know what? This saw is just not, it's getting dull. And I don't know how far I got to go, but I know it's more than 4 inches into this thing. So I went and got a new blade, and it was worth the trip. I was an hour and a half going to get it, come back, put it on. I'd still be there drilling the hole otherwise. And I had to stop every so often and chisel out the wood that I would cut through. And the depth of the hole saw is, 2 inches maybe? Inch and a half, 2 inches. Have to stop and whittle all that wood out. I got done. I got through. I hit foam. And then I was through into the basement. And I also bought some metal ducting because floor from the dryer down into the basement, the stub I had bought wasn't long enough, so I needed to put a piece of ducting on that, and then I had to go through whatever thickness this wall was. Well, the wood part was 9.5 inches, and somehow I got through it, and it was it took a little while. And then, so I hooked it all up and it was done and I was relieved. I said, I think that's it for today, boys and girls. Uncle Tommy's tired. And 9.5 inches. I couldn't believe it. But it works. The humidity level's down. I think the clothes maybe dry a little bit faster. I don't think that's definitive, but it's at least drier inside the house. And the plastic vent that I had bought, the little vent lint trap kit filter thing, in a moment of poetic justice and symbolism, it went in the trash. I didn't want to look at it. I don't want to deal with it. It didn't work well. It didn't go together well. It was cheap plastic that I paid way too much money for. I did save the ductwork. I didn't need it. I had plenty of ducting, but it's gone. Gone out of my life. And that was just the start. That was Saturday. There was a lot more to do after that, but I got to take a break. It's been a busy week. We got amazing amount of stuff done. The kitchen, you just better wait, I guess. We'll be back. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. Big week, big week. Thank you. two Belaflex in a row, two Belaflex tunes. Is that okay? Is that allowed? Is that is it even legal? Is FCC going to be in touch? I'm not sure. Takes me to my happy place is what it does. Oh my goodness. So anyway, so we had, I guess it was Sunday, I finished putting in the bass cabinet, screwed them to the wall, measured everything multiple times, had squares and levels and everything, and got that done. So that's done. Now, the cabinets are in. I'm looking at the kitchen, and there's a door in between the laundry room and the kitchen, that's an old door, and it's all kind of cockeyed, and it's rough, and it's been, at some point somebody had locked a dog probably in the laundry room, and the door's all messed up, and I'm like, I don't want to get rid of these old doors, but I said, that door just doesn't look right there, so I ordered a new door. My friends at Hammond Lumber got me a six-panel door. I didn't want to do it, but I said, you know what? It's got to, you walk in, it just, you know, slaps you in the face. So I said, I'm going to change that one door. And now my wife is saying, well, maybe we should change that door too. And I'm like, oh, God. Well, so it was a tight fit. I knew it was going to be a tight fit. I'd measured it multiple times, but it would fit. So one night last week, the door had come that day, and it was in the way. I mean, it's, you know, it's framed up door. It's in the middle of the kitchen. I got to get it out of there because I've got other stuff we're doing. We're doing a lot of stuff in the kitchen. So I got the recip saw out and commenced. I took the door off first. I took off the hinges and took the door off. And then I commenced the cutting, and I got the frame out. And I brought the door in, and it don't fit. It was close, but it was tight. So I'm whittling away. Now, on the kitchen side is drywall. On the laundry room side, I'm looking at 3/4-inch old boards. And behind those old boards is my nemesis, plaster. And so I'm cutting, and the plaster is going, the sawdust is going, the wood is flying, and I finally got it to fit. And I have made such a royal mess. Fortunately, my wife, she came in a couple times. When I first cut the hole, I cleaned up because I've got the new floor down in the kitchen. I don't want to damage the floor, although it is scratch resistant, and it stood the test. But I've got all this plaster everywhere. So I've cleaned up several times, and I finally get the door in, and it took forever to clean. You know, you vacuum 14 times, and then you wash the floor wipe it down at least a couple times. And then now I'm expecting a breakdown the next morning because she's going to come in and clean after I've cleaned because she's the cleaning person. I'm just the schlub who makes a mess. And I thought, man, I'm going to get it right between the eyes this morning. And she was happy. So that wasn't bad. Well, okay, I did clean a little bit. But I said, well, you know, is that plaster? She says, I don't mind the plaster dust. The sawdust, because says there's a lot less than there used to be. And she had cleaned the kitchen, I think, the day before. And then I go in and make this huge mess. Anyway, the door got put in. And it looks good. And it's plumb and level and all that good stuff. And it opens and closes properly. And I've got the old door, which I don't think I'll reuse, but I've got it just in case. I can't toss it. I've got to save it because it's original to the house. And that opened the door for the next project, Well, actually, I'm out of sequence here. On Sunday, I did the door during the week, but Sunday, I had another major project, and I mapped these things out in my head for a long time. And that was that the laundry room has a washer hookup and a laundry sink, which are functional. And then they also, and they tie into a 2-inch black iron drain in the basement. And also into that drain was a stub over to the kitchen. And obviously the kitchen sink was out. And when we moved in, first time she uses the washer, the laundry sink backs up. Okay. And I go into the kitchen, which I hadn't done anything in at that point. And water has erupted out of the kitchen drain onto the floor. Oh, nice. This is good. And as I mentioned, we discussed last week, it's probably a gray water drain. Okay, so I'd gotten the pipe Saturday morning, and I knew I needed more pipe. So when I went to get the hole saw, I got another 10 feet of pipe. So I had 40 feet of 3-inch PVC pipe that I'm going to put in Sunday morning. And I'm kind of chomping on the bit to get this done because I know it's a project. And I probably started about 8 a.m. and I'm thinking, what kind of catastrophes am I in for on this one? You know, the day after drilling through 9.5 inches of wood. And excuse me, by 10 o'clock it was done. It almost all fell into place. Got the right pitch. Got to clean out. Everything is plumbed up. Everything drains properly. And, you know, you plan for the major nightmare, and it doesn't hit you in between the eyes. And, of course, I had had it the day before. So that one went well. So, you know, I probably got $200 in stuff to hook up those drains. But that's better than having a sink back up. And I'm debating what to do with the old stub in the basement. I think at some point I'll cut it off and cap it. It is capped off now, but there's this artwork tree of plumbing, PVC and black iron that is sticking up. And I've got cleanup week coming. Now, cleanup week is May 16th in Stockton Springs. And cleanup week for me is a big deal because I get to shop. I'm looking as people put piles of stuff out, because this is a recycling thing, really. People pick stuff up. I mean, that's a good thing. Rather than just send it to a landfill, if there's something you can use, fantastic. I'm waiting till the 11th to start putting my stuff out, but I'm dragging detritus from the basement because there's a lot of junk in the basement still. And I'm prepping it for coming upstairs and going out in front of the house. Got a lot of windows. I've given away a lot of windows. I got more windows. And as a matter of fact, I just realized I've got the windows I haven't put in yet. I probably got to get those done before the 16th so I can put them out. But I will now be a supplier instead of a buyer. I'll be a seller, although there's no money involved. Just put it out, and if somebody wants it, they take it. It'll be some aluminum storm windows, so those people will probably scrap or use for a greenhouse or something. But that's a project coming up. So in the process, underneath that laundry room, I've been spending most of my time the past week. There was a lot of junk down there. There still is, but I've been moving it out of the way. And I realized two things. If I move the junk out of the way, it's a lot easier to maneuver down there. And then even though there are some lights, I brought a LED spotlight, cordless LED light, and I can actually see what I'm doing because after I did the drains, had to do the wiring for the kitchen. And that's not a big deal. There was a separate circuit for microwave, separate circuit for refrigerator, and a big honking wire for the electric range, A3 cable. And these are all coming up through the floor into the breaker box, so I got to put them in conduit. Now, the regular wiring, no big deal. Getting a piece of A3 in through conduit is a big deal. And what I wound up doing is removing the sheath from, you know, the outer insulation from that. And it was still challenging. And I got three-quarter inch conduit to get it up through there, and I got it. And I'm not crazy about wiring fat wires. I just get nervous about them because there's so much power that goes through them. You got to do it right. And, you know, just recheck to make sure all your connections are tight. And I've seen enough installations where somebody doesn't tighten things right. And next thing you know, at some point, something smells funny. Or if you open up the box, you see charred or melted stuff. I don't know about you, but I don't like that. So I spent a lot of time just going over everything, making sure it was nice and tight, and it's all done. And the stove is almost ready to go in. Not quite, but we're getting close. And so the cabinets are in, wiring's done, plumbing is done. What's left? I can't put the sink in because there's no countertop. And I started that yesterday, the countertop. And the countertop, we're going to have to take a break here. So we'll save the countertop for after the break. That is a major project, which I started last night. But there's another major project that got done too. I mean, it's been, been a busy week. Interesting things, hopefully, if you might consider as things that can save you money, because I have no budget at this point. And we'll be back in a little bit. I got to take a break. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning.
Choice in cereals, the best to you each morning, presents
Huckleberry
Hound. Okay. Let's go over to Bangor, Maine. I don't think Huckleberry Hound is there, but we should check. Good morning, Chelsea.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me today.
Glad to. What's going on?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, we've got a lot of really wonderful pets that are looking for their forever families, so I'm excited to talk about one today, and
all right.
He is super cute. So I have a puppy, and I'm very surprised. He has been here and available for adoption for a few weeks now, so he is ready to go home. His name is Triton. He is 3 months old, and he is such a sweet boy. He has a big personality and an even bigger future ahead of him. He is a mixed breed, so we are expecting him to be a little larger and an active boy. Now, Triton is in his fundamental puppy learning stages, so it's going to be really, really important that you stay consistent with his training, his structure, and having plenty of patience as he learns everything from basic manners to how to navigate the world. Just lots of time, love, and patience, we like to say, and lots of treats. Treats are definitely very helpful. Mm. He is full of energy, curiosity. He just loves a lot of love, and he is ready. So we do ask that everybody in the home comes in to meet with him, as well as if there's any dog friends in the home. We do dog-to-dog visits here at Bangor Humane Society, just to make sure everybody's comfortable. But yeah, we have him, and also we have a female as well. It's his sister. So we have puppies, we've got older dogs, we've got middle-aged dogs, we've got lots of dogs right now, and cats, and some small animal friends. So we have a lot of really wonderful friends right now waiting. So
and
we're hoping to see people.
If you want a Triton and his sister, they almost look like a match set.
When you look
at their pictures, because their faces are half white and half black.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
You know what?
Yeah, and...
I don't know if you remember the Little Rascals. It was on in the 30s, but they had Petey with the... and Triton reminds me of Petey.
Yeah, I can see that face structure. I can definitely see what you're talking about, for sure.
Beautiful dogs. Beautiful. But, all of them are incredibly... I was looking last night... mm-hmm. At all the dogs, and every one of them is just gorgeous. There's Pogo just knocks me out looking at that face, and then there's Rebel, and there's Tito, and Rico and Karen, and they're all beautiful animals. So if you're looking for a dog, you got to go in.
Hey, yeah, come on down. We open up at 1 o'clock today, and we're open till 6, so we'll be here for you.
Okay, right there on Mount Hope Avenue. You can't miss it. You'll see the sign.
Can't miss it.
All right.
It's big and bright.
Yes. Chelsea, thank you for taking the time. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you, as always.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
Cool. I'm telling you, take a look at the webpages, bangorhumane.org. My wife and I were looking at them last night, and they are all handsome animals, that's for sure. Yesterday afternoon, I started working on the countertop, and I've come up with this deal. I've done it now for 20 plus years, and it's a cheap way to get a durable countertop. Now, you know, a regular granite countertop, a Corian countertop, those are fantastic. They will last the rest of your life, or until you decide you want to change your countertop. But they're not inexpensive. They're not it depends. I mean, you can get some pretty good deals on both those products. An alternate scheme would be to use, and there's several reasons I do this. I use tile, 1 foot square tile. I've used granite. I've used marble. We're gone back to granite. And, you could use ceramic, too, but I prefer a stone surface just because if you nick it with a knife or something, you know, a lot of times a ceramic tile, you nick the glazed surface, you've got a different color underneath. I've used, stone tile. And then it's a question of just looking for the right price. What I wound up with was and I should look it up, the name of the company. I think it's Marble and Granite Warehouse or something like that. They're actually in California. And I got granite tile from them. I want to say it came on a pallet even, but it was still a good deal. It was $7 a square foot. Now the beauty of working with a tile like this is that, and this is for me personally, I know you're probably a better craftsperson than I am, but I know if I make a mistake, I'm only out 1 square foot. If I've got, 32 square feet, this is where professionals come in. You pay for that experience. I'm doing this by myself. I don't, I do it once every 5 to 10 years. And I do have a Ryobi, a cheap Ryobi wet saw for cutting tile that I picked up at a auction, actually. I think it was like $5. It was brand new. It was $5. And I've used the heck out of it. And it works okay. It's not the best tile saw in the world, but for what I do, again, which can be a little bit rustic in nature, it's fantastic. So I spent a lot of time yesterday making sure everything measured out right and was square. Then I laid out where the sink is going. I've got a composite sink that's going in. It kind of looks like Corian to me. Drops in from the top, and it'll be a nice... we got white cabinets, we got a white sink, then we got a granite countertop. So the color scheme is nice. Everything's centered properly. Excuse me. Cut the hole, did it right, fit the sink. Okay, cool. Now I got to do the tile. Now I've got 3/4 inch... underlayment. You could use plywood, you could use OSB, you could use Advantech. Any of these will work okay. I've used all. And I've got to, so I've got the underlayment down, and it's in place. It's been fastened, and I've got 3/4 of an inch edge showing all the way around the perimeter of the countertop. And of course, I have to make sure everything will fit in because of what I'm going to do next. And that is, I cover the edge with tile. Now, it's only 3/4 of an inch tall. And I've got that wet saw. So I took 2 12-inch square tiles and I ripped, if you want to call it that, I cut 3/4-inch strips on the wet saw, which is fun to do with granite. Granite's a little bit harder material, but it's not a big deal. Knocked them out, and of course they're all wet and full of granite dust, wet granite dust. So I wiped them off, brought them inside, let them dry. I guess I finished around 5:30, 6 o'clock. Went inside, fell asleep, I admit it. around 8 o'clock, I said, "Oh, I'm gonna go look at the tile," and it was dry enough. So I then glued it. I'm using an adhesive, not a grout. Glued it on the edge of the countertop substrate. Used masking tape to hold the pieces in place. I've done this, as I say, many times. I do have to cut some pieces because all the strips I have are 1 foot long. And at that point, it was dark out, and I'm not going to cut them in the dark, make a lot of noise. It is not the quietest saw in the world, cutting granite. But most of the edging is done. There's little pieces that I'll have to cut today. And I took all the tape off this morning, and everything is nice and solid. And now I will work with a lot of full pieces one by one. Now, the counter has to have a little bit of an overhang in the front. So the counter, the substrate, if you will, comes out from the wall 25 inches. And then I've got that, it's 5/16 thick tile on it. And it's just, it's the right dimension. And now I can put down full tile on the counter. Some places I'll have to cut. But that'll go pretty fast. I've got 2 separate counters. I've got one that is nominally 2 feet by 5 feet, no hole in it for a sink. The other one is an L shape where the sink is. And excuse me, this is relatively easy to do at this point. I will be doing cutting today. There's a hole for the sink. the sink will drop in. And I'll probably be done with all the tile. I know I'll be done with all the tiling today, which means probably either tonight or tomorrow I will have the kitchen sink hooked up. And it's been about 6 weeks since we've had a kitchen sink. We've got a laundry sink. We've got bathroom sinks. But it'd be awful nice to have a kitchen sink again. And there's paint that has to be touched up. And there's when I put the cabinets in, I realized I had forgotten to put an outlet in for the microwave, which goes in the cabinet above the microwave, which is a wall mount microwave. So I did that last week as well when I was doing the wiring, and I had to poke a couple extra holes in the wall to get the wire up through some insulation that was, there's 1 inch of fiberglass in the wall between the laundry room and the kitchen. So I had to get up through that and did. Then I obviously had to patch the hole. So that needs to be touched. This is a little bit of touch up to do. And I anticipate today, unless something happens, I'll get it done. So that was done. There's a lot of planning that goes into doing the countertops. I had to order the tile. The tile came pretty quick. It'd been here for months, really. And the execution takes a little bit of planning, but not that much. And you just have to take your time. And I've learned that, you know, I could be patient and plan it out and measure and square. And anyway, so That's going to be cool. I did shoot some video last night. We'll have more video. We're a little bit behind. We have one video that my youngest daughter, Hillary, is doing the editing for me, and she's got one that she's had for a couple weeks. So that one will probably be up beginning of the week, the latest. And then I shot one last night to show where we were, because there was something else I did this week in the kitchen trying to get this room ready for use. And that was the ceiling. And if you may remember back a while ago, we did bathroom, bedroom over. And the bedroom had ceiling tiles, you know, the old cellulose-type one-foot-square ceiling tiles. I didn't want to take it down, and I really don't want to put drywall up, on a ceiling especially. I can stand it up on walls all day long. I don't want to do ceilings. I've done enough of them. I have a rack that would put the piece up to the ceiling, but no, I don't want to do this. You know, I had the alternative, which was the ceiling tile, which is plastic, and it glues up, and it looks like an old-fashioned metal ceiling. And it's not horribly expensive. So we did that in the bedroom and the bathroom, both bathrooms, actually. And remember, it was a month or so ago, we had a leak. Had a loose fitting that I had to replace. And water came down from the second-floor bathroom to the first-floor bathroom and bedroom. And the ceiling was fine. It didn't get that wet anyway. Even if it was drywall, it would have been okay. But with the plastic tiles, the water came through okay, and no damage. So now I've got a really big room. The room is the kitchen area. It's about 450 square feet. It's a big room. It's two rooms that were made into one. And I had gotten the tile. I got a different manufacturer's product, which is a nominal 24 by 24, or 2 foot by 2 foot. Except it wasn't. It was 19 and a half by 19 and a half. Now, maybe that's a metric number. I'm not sure. It seems to me it might be. Doesn't matter. I wanted a smaller tile because it's easy to put up by myself. So I got into the kitchen Thursday night, and I got started. And to keep me entertained while I'm doing it, this is an easy project. And if you have crummy-looking ceilings that are relatively flat, now, if you have a popcorn ceiling, you're out of luck because you're not going to be able to stick to it. But if you have old ceiling tiles, and we have another room with old ceiling tiles, it's going to get covered the same way. You can use a construction adhesive. In this case, the one they recommend is Loctite Power Grab. And you just stick them up. So now, this is kind of a boring process. So I got my iPad. And you remember the Civil War series, Ken Burns' Civil War? Just a great show. He does great great programs. The guy who helped write that was a historian named Shelby Foote. And I could just listen to the man for hours. And I'm on YouTube, and I'm looking for, you know, when we're going to play, what Beatles album or Stones album am I going to play? And there's a thing for an interview with Shelby Foote. So I put the interview on Shelby Foote. It's like 20 minutes. And it was interesting and just fun to listen to. And he's a very impressive guy. And then there was a three-hour Shelby Foote interview with on C-SPAN at his house. I put that on and blew through the whole thing doing the ceiling. I finished when Shelby finished. And, well, I kind of finished. I ran out of tile. 17 shy. I've got a couple hundred that I stuck on the ceiling that night, and it went that quick. I mean, you know, 3 hours really is not that long. And I took some photos, and you'll see it on the video, which I shot yesterday. It really looks good. And it was about 80 cents a square foot to cover the ceiling. And in my book, that's about the cost of the drywall, if I was to drywall it, not counting taping, and knowing the way I do taping, it was going to take a while. It was going to be a mess. this was pretty mess-free, and it has a kind of a wow factor to it. I love, if you don't like old-fashioned tin ceilings, you don't want to do this. But if you like that look, and I want to tell you, the shadow and the light, it really came out nice. So it's I ordered the missing pieces, and those will go up. Here's the other thing. You know, you got to trim it. So I did the big area with full pieces, and I got a perimeter I've got to do. So I've got a scissor. I'm cutting these suckers with a scissor and popping them up like nothing. The whole perimeter, which, you know, you're cutting and fitting in, you know, tight against the, you know, the walls. There's nothing. This is a Gozy project if ever there was one. And everybody seems to sell them. Home Depot sells them. You can get online. They're on eBay. You can Google it and see any number of vendors who sell a lot of different products. The ones we did in the first rooms were full 2 foot by 4 foot. And that worked okay. It was a little unwieldy for one person to do by themselves. So the small pieces that I did in this room worked out really well working by myself. And if I needed to take a break, which I didn't, because it was so exciting to get it done, and they just go up. Here's the thing, though. The adhesive, I tried this probably 30 years ago when they first came out. And they said, oh, you stick them on the ceiling. And it didn't stick. The adhesive technology has changed. Now, I had a couple, I glued around the perimeter and in the center with this Loctite Power Grab construction adhesive, which has very high grab. In other words, simple technological term, the ability for the adhesive to immediately bond to the degree that it doesn't want to pull apart. It's called grab. So I had, several that I stuck up on the ceiling, literally stuck it. And I'm looking and there's a little bit of a gap at the edge and I want to remove it from the ceiling and reset it. And it was a fight. I'm like, this should come off. It's still wet. It was that hard to get off. It really was challenging. So it's kind of impressive product. I was probably, again, they were 19 and a half by 19 and a half. I probably got about 10 tiles worth of gluing, if you will, out of each tube. And I think I had a dozen tubes. Maybe I had I probably had a few more than a dozen. I got a box. They come in a box of 12, and I had some on hand. And I've still got several left. I have enough to finish it. And I'll use them because I have more ceilings to do. In this old house, as many old houses in Maine, when the plaster ceiling fell down in the 50s, they put up those 12 by 12 ceiling tiles, which are fine. But I've got two foyers that have it and a living room. And by golly, I'm going to go and do the rest. Same deal. All right. I guess we're going to take a break because it's 8:55. We got Pete coming on this week, and he's got something to talk about. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be, but you and I will be, I'm not going to say pleasantly surprised, but we will certainly find it interesting. Stay with us. We'll be back in a little bit.
Trains are running towards each other. Shotguns are pointed at my head. Tornado clouds are forming o'er the crossroads. H-bombs are falling towards my bed, but I'm still here. I'm still here, how about that? My city may be falling, but I'm still here. Assassination squad has got their orders. The repossession man is on his way. The landlady's given me her notice. I'll get pitched out with the trash just any day, but I'm still here. I'm still here, now ain't that slick. I may have lost my lunchbox, but I'm still here. The moths have ate my shirts and all my...
Okay, we're back. It's 9:06. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. I don't want it to rain today. I got to go outside and cut tile. Come on. Get with the program. I thought it was going to be nice today. Nicer. Well, we'll see. Maybe where I live, it'll be okay. Maybe not. You know, one of the things about using a wet saw, a tile saw, is it tends to spray you a little bit with water and, in my case, granite dust, which is a lot of fun. The last counter I did, I had used marble, and marble is a little bit easier to cut, but it also is, and this upset my wife. This does not bother me in the least bit, but let's say you have a jar of pickles on the countertop, and you take a pickle out because you're making a sandwich, okay, and you're going to put a pickle on it, and you drip some pickle juice onto the marble. Pickle juice, which has vinegar in it, will make a little stain on the marble. Marble is calcium carbonate, and it tends to break down with a little anything acidic. Wine might stain it. That hasn't been an issue, but I like that. It gives us some patina in my mind's eye. It upset my wife greatly, so we went back to granite and got a really nice pattern. You'll see it on the video soon, so that's coming. Oh, speaking of which, we got a text line at 601-207-4478. Got a question on siding. I'm installing vinyl siding on a garage. I plan to build a lean-to. On the side of the garage, I plan to install the siding up to where I want the ledger board. Thoughts on transitioning from siding, from the siding moving upwards to the ledger board? Recommendations on this. I have some Grace water ice shield to place on the wall above the ledger board onto the ledger. Is that a good method? Yeah, I think so. I think that would be fine. You know, it's really the Grace is going to function like a drip edge, and you should have a drip edge above the shed roof that you're putting in. But that'll work. You know, it kind of – and I have to deal with one – using ice and water shield in that kind of area where there's a potential for water to get in behind a ledger board it's a cheap date and it does a good job. I've got a sliding glass door that's coming out. The door has the glass on the door, the seal on the glass is double glazed, has failed. But more significantly, where the door sits on the sill, which is a massive sill like the one I drilled into last week, has caused major rot. And there's a deck up against it, so it's going to be a fun project. The door's got to come out, and I might wind up, obviously I got to do it on warmer weather. I'm probably going to be covering that opening with OSB or something while I whittle away at the sill. I don't know how bad the sill is. And I'm hoping I don't have to take the deck down because it is big. And it's well built. It's well done. Whoever did the door, on the other hand, needs to get slapped upside of the head. And maybe with a piece of wood. I don't know. particular drill brush brand or shape for salt removal. I guess this is for cars. We get usually wind up on eBay, and they sell cleaning brushes that you would put in a drill. I think they're usually blue and white. They might be red and white, but that's all you need. And I'm sure they sell them at Harbor Freight. I haven't seen them at Home Depot, but they're probably there somewhere. But they do a good job, and a lot of water and or cleaning agents. It is challenging getting salt out of carpeting. It really is. We have an extractor shampooer that we use, and it takes a lot of time to get, if it's really caked on, to get that out. And so you get it wet, you brush it, you wet it some more, you brush it, you're vacuuming all the time trying to get that out of the carpeting. It takes time. It's not a quick and easy project. So let's see. So we have an ongoing discussion in my house about heat. Not so much about how to heat. That's still up in the air, actually. We have a condensing gas boiler, and that may be fine. That may be what we stay with. And we have about 10 radiators. And even the radiators aren't that much of an issue. The beauty of radiators is this. These are massive things. And when they were put in, the boiler down in the basement was a coal boiler. And that was a different kind of animal from an oil boiler, or in the case now, a gas boiler. And the difference is this. When you had a coal fire in your coal boiler, you made the fire, you raked the coals, and the heat was coming up all the time. And in my case, this was the two-pipe hot water system, a gravity-fed. Those pipes are gone, by the way. It's been replumbed to use circulators. And here's what happens. In a coal fire, you can dampen the fire down, and you can regulate it to deliver just the right amount of heat to all the 10 radiators I've got in the house. So it doesn't overheat. It doesn't underheat if you've done it right. It's just steady heat. So if you envision, if you've graphed this out, time versus heat, you got like pretty flat line till the coal fire goes out and it starts to drop and somebody says, you know what? Getting a little cool, Abner. Go down the basement, check the coal fire. Abner goes down, rakes it, puts some more coal on, and it comes back up. And if Abner knows what he's doing, it's steady heat. Fast forward to, I don't know, the 40s, 50s. We start taking out all these coal devices, these solid fuel devices that run in a steady state, and we put in oil. And oil comes on, and bam, gives you a lot of energy really fast. And what happens? The temperature goes up. Everything heats up, maybe overshoots a little bit, gets a little bit too warm. Burner shuts off, thermostat shuts off, temperature drops. So instead of having a steady line now, you have peaks and valleys. Now, you can engineer that so it's sinusoidal. You needed to know that word today. It's not severe peaks and valleys. It's gentle peaks and valleys. But it's not a straight line, usually. And that's the way most heating folks do it. And the beauty of big cast iron radiators is they hold heat for a while. And I love that about it. My wife likes that as well. And as it turns out, the boiler that we have can be run either in this on-off mode or in a steady state. Now, the steady state is a little bit different, and through the wonder of electronics, we would use a control called the outdoor reset control, which I talk about all the time. And whether it's hot water baseboards or it's radiators, an outdoor reset control will deliver steady heat to whatever the distribution device is at a given temperature based on what the outside temperature is. So it gets hotter when it's cold out, gets cooler when it's warmer out. And I turned down the thermostat last night, and we woke up this morning, it was 60 degrees in the house, which some folks might think is okay. It was a little uncivilized for me and my wife. So, and we'll live with it. We turn the heat up, it comes on, and then it tends to overshoot if we don't think to turn the thing down. And I've got kind of a wonky thermostat, and I haven't changed it yet because we may just go to the, we're probably going to go to the outdoor reset at some point, but we're not there yet. But we've had a conversation, there's another conversation about radiators, but I got to take a break. It's 9:15. Man, I just keep getting these hooks, don't I? I think that's called programming. It is hot and cold, though. It is Saturday morning. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. We'll be right back.
Up above my head, there is music in the air. Up above my head, music in the air. And I really do believe, joy somewhere, all in my room, music everywhere, all in my home, music in the air, up above my head, that is music in the air, well, 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 I really do believe joy somewhere, up above my head, music in the air, music in the air, up above my head.
Okay, we're back. It's 9:20. It is hot and cold Saturday morning, a little Kalamazoo right there. So the dilemma, another dilemma, is not the inconsistency, the peaks and valleys of the heat in the Gozy house. It's cleaning the radiators. Now, the radiators in my house probably have never been cleaned. Or if they have, it's been a long time ago. And I don't know if you know this about my wife, but she's the cleaning ninja. And I have cleaned the radiators before she has cleaned the radiators, just like I did the floor last week. And in the kitchen, because that's where I'm working now, there's two radiators. The one that I had moved, and I disconnected it when I did the floor because we wanted to paint it. So I have it disconnected, moved out of the way, and I've been painting it. And then the other radiator, which is hooked up. And so she cleaned the one that I've painted. I cleaned it, then she cleaned it. And then this past weekend, she took it upon herself. She said, I'm going to clean the other radiator. Now, don't ask me why. But, I'll tell you why. I have to. In the kitchen, I have a machete. Doesn't everybody? And I have the machete for a reason. The previous owners left the machete. I actually own my own personal machete, but so I have two machetes. There's only one in the kitchen. And it's sharp. And I was using it to trim foam because what's better for trimming foam than a big knife? In this case, a machete. Well, she got the machete, which a little unnerving, and she had a rag wrapped around it, and she's cleaning in between the radiator, you know, sections. And I have some good candid photos of her with a machete, which I sent to my kids, and they're used to. There's some unusual photos that my children receive one of which is their mother with a machete, waving a machete at me. But the question is, okay, Tom, you're going to replumb the radiators. You're going to be redoing the system. You're redoing the house. How are we dealing with these radiators? How are you going to paint them? Now, these are big honking radiators, some of them. And they're all heavy, small or big. The damn things are just heavy. And some of them are monstrously heavy. I mean, there's some big, a couple big suckers. And she'll ask me, it's almost like a quiz. What are you going to do? Are we doing the, what happens first with the radiators? And we had that discussion this morning before I left for the radio station. And, you know, in the morning, I'm not my usual, in the morning at 4 a.m., I'm not my usual perky self. And so I'm trying not to be an annoying human being or rude, but it's, you know, it's 4:15. I don't really want to talk about painting radiators because I don't know what the heck to do. You know, they're challenging. We have to move them. They have to be away from the wall if you're painting the thing. Are you going to clean it? And the one in particular, the real problem radiator is in the room we use as a bedroom. And it's probably 5 feet long. It's only about 2 feet high, but it sticks out from the wall about 9-10 inches. It's big and it's heavy. And at some point I have to move it. I put the new floor in up to that radiator and I had to stop. And in anticipation that when I cut the pipes, I'll be able to move it away from the wall. That may not be, you know, if you've ever seen Pete and I, even Pete and I together, it's going to be a challenge. But that room is finished. And she wants the radiator painted. And I said, well, look, here's the deal. Well, one thing is in the kitchen, I'm spray painting the radiator. She wanted the same color as the wood stove that I've painted, which is a high temperature wood stove paint. You don't need to use high temperature wood stove paint on a radiator. It doesn't get that hot. A lot of people have this misconception that a radiator can catch on. If you put like a blanket over a radiator, it's going to catch on fire. It's going to burn the house down. No, that's not going to happen. Electric heater or any other kind of heater, yeah, maybe so. Don't do that. But on a radiator, you can cover it with, if it's overheating, you know, if you're in an apartment building or if you've got an old house and you got a room that's overheating, you could put a cover over that radiator to keep the heat from coming out as much as it is. I remember having this conversation with a lawyer who is now a judge, and he just didn't get it. And he's looking at me cross-eyed like I've just told him, you know, blue is green or green is blue or red or whatever. I said, look, we could paint it with house paint, you know, latex paint. Is that good? It's not terrible. It's still going to get hot. It's still going to radiate heat, and it'll work. So that's, you know, that's a possibility. But we'll see. In the meantime, if I hit the magic button right here, I'm not sure what this could mean. Could mean trouble. Or it could mean Pete is here. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Good. You know the name of this song?
Yeah, it's the one from the something or other.
Peter Gunn.
Peter, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Okay. What's shaking, man?
Nothing. Did you tell everybody the good news?
What good news is that?
I had my annual physical on Wednesday.
Oh, no, I didn't.
My blood work is flawless.
Okay.
Perfect across the board. I'm the picture of health.
Did you get that?
When people have something wrong with themselves, they always seem to brag about it. They're like, oh, I've got a condition. I'm autistic. I don't know. They're just like happy. They're almost like giddy to tell you that there's something wrong. I'm flawless. My blood work's all in the green.
Now, is this coming from you or from your doctor? Did she contact you?
I looked at the results. It gives you a bunch of graphs and tells you where everything is.
Okay.
I had nothing in the high, nothing in the low, right where it should be.
Yeah, good deal.
That's what it's like to be Pete. Day in, day out.
Pete's got a bell. Do it again.
I only do the bell when it's poignant.
Okay. Well, you're going to ring the bell for this one. There you go. Last week, Pete made meatloaf. And I want to tell you, Pete's a good cook.
I made meatloaf. That was last week's meatloaf. Was the second meatloaf. 2 weeks ago, I made another meatloaf, and I got the stuff on the shopping list to make another meatloaf. I don't know why. I don't know how. But there's just something about a good meatloaf.
Yeah.
That I just hits right for me. I'm like, I get excited. I get excited to eat meatloaf, and I make a good meatloaf. Like first try, my meatloaf was flawless.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what. I don't know how you do it, but man, I'm impressed.
I think so. And I don't do the exorbitant, like that weird ketchup and brown sugar thing everybody puts on the top.
No, that's a sin. You don't put ketchup.
There's sugar in ketchup. You can use ketchup later.
Yeah.
But don't. It's weird to, like, mix brown sugar. Let's try to make this thing that's all ground beef, eggs, and milk very unhealthy.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to mention. I read this story. It's a feel-good story about Maine.
Yeah.
There's a competition in Las Vegas for operators of machinery.
Okay.
Like backhoes and things.
Yeah.
The winner of, like, the best, I don't know the exact title, so you're going to have to forgive me if he's listening or if he knows anybody's listening. The winner of the best excavator on the planet is a kid from Wells, Maine. I say kid. He's 24. Wow. His name is Brian Hayden Jr. And he could move Earth to, like, you know, the thousandth of an inch. I mean, he grew up running machinery and excavators, and he's currently the best operator on the planet, and he's from Wells, Maine.
All right.
I think that's cool.
Maine leads the nation once again.
Those machines aren't the most precise looking. You know, you look at them, and then, you know, operators can get very, very precise with them, but it still doesn't look that precise. So to be the very best in Maine, then the best in the region, then the best in the country, then the best on the planet, I'm impressed with that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just getting older, and I'm becoming the cast of King of the Hill. But I'm very impressed with this young man's ability to operate an excavator. Because here's the thing. That's a marketable skill. That's a very marketable skill.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
You know?
It is.
And he doesn't have $80,000 in student loans for that skill.
No. Pete, we got to take a break.
Good for him.
We got to take a break right now. You don't go anywhere. You stay right there.
I'll stay right here.
And we'll be
here.
And we'll be right back. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. Get your surfboards after 10 o'clock.
Short and the nights are long. Where they walk and I walk, they twist and I'll twist, they shimmy and I'll shimmy, they fly and I'll fly. Well, they're out there having fun in that warm California sun. Well, I'm going out of west out on the coast, where the California girls are really the most.
George Jetson, his boy Elroy, Don and Judy,
There we go. And Pete's back with us. Hey, Pete.
Hey, listen, when I call in, there's a lot of wit and wisdom that I expel, a lot of praise and prose. So everybody wants to hear what I have to say.
Okay.
Until the end of the show, I kind of start talking about cars, and I feel like I might kind of lose some people if they're not looking for a car at that point.
Yeah.
Because that's the end of it. They're like, oh, we're all done. They click off. So I want to talk about cars right now, so they have no choice but to listen to me if they want to hear the rest of what I have to say.
Okay. All right.
Which is always worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
I sold a bunch of cars this week.
Yes.
So the all-wheel drive Prius, that one's gone. That was a great deal.
That was a stinking good deal.
67K. That's gone. The 2014 Prius with 97K, that one's gone. Another beautiful, one-owner, well-maintained vehicle. What do I have? I've got, again, I'll mind you, keep an eye on gas prices. I've got one gas RAV4. I got two hybrid RAV4s. Very, they're both, one's a 16, one's a 17. One's a little bit higher mileage, one's a little bit lower mileage. As prices reflect that, you don't like one, I got the other one. Those are all-wheel drive hybrids. I've got a Prius C, a 2017. That runs excellent. I took that to Bangor the other day. And then I've also got a 2017 Prius Prime and a straight gas Corolla. All of these are wonderful on fuel. The Corolla I was getting 39 miles per gallon out of the other day.
Wow.
That's not even a hybrid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, $4 a gallon.
Corollas
$4.25 a gallon, something
are
like that.
Something else, man. I tell you, if you just want a simple car, if you think, and this is not true, but if you think a hybrid is too complicated for you, a Corolla is the way to go. You get the reliability of a Toyota.
One of my favorite vehicles.
Yeah, yeah. So, good. So,
all right, so that's out of the way. So let's talk about something else.
Okay, your mother with a machete.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Okay. That was quite a that was a moment, I want to tell you.
Where is my machete, by the way? It must be there. I remember seeing it in your basement when we were moving stuff.
That's now my machete. You gave it to me.
Yeah, but technically it's mine.
Okay, I have it.
A buddy of mine gave me that for Christmas one year. I don't know why, but
Joe gave that to you for Christmas?
Joey Box of Donuts gave me a machete for Christmas.
What a guy, huh? You know what?
I didn't own a house or property, right? He's like, here's a machete. I'm like, all right, cool. Then you needed something to trim. I'm like, here, take this machete.
Yeah, I have it. It's in the barn. And right, I started straightening out the barn a little bit last weekend. I had a few moments. I said, you know what? Let's get this show on the road. And
You know what?
Yeah.
One other thing, I was just looking at this, and not to interrupt you about the barn talk, because anytime you organize anything is a moment to be celebrated.
Yes.
But one other car, it's not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it's going to be a good one price wise. It's going to be a very good one quality wise.
Mm-hmm.
We picked up last week a 2015. I normally don't talk about stuff that's not ready yet, but I wanted to mention this one because I respect and admire the previous owner. We picked up last week a 2015 RAV4 straight gas. I think it has 180-some-odd thousand miles on it. Now, part of the reason why was I was at the auction, I'm looking at it, I opened the glove box, and there's about an inch and a quarter thick stack of service records. I'm like, oh, my brother. So I start going through it. One owner car. The guy had everything you can think of done to it. From, you know, he had the initial stuff all done at the dealer. He had a nice, I know the garage that he used for everything else. Oil changes on right on the tick. And here's the kicker. Here's how I know that we would be good friends. Every single oil change, he provided his own oil. Now, I don't do that, but I respect that level of diligence. Now, I'm not using your oil. I'm bringing my own.
Your crummy oil.
I refine my own oil at home. So just the fact that, I mean, every single one says customer provided own oil. And I absolutely love that. And everything, every little noise, he had the tires rotated. He did stuff that I don't even do, like having the cooling system flushed.
Yeah.
So that's what's maybe said we got to get this car. So that'll be probably, I'm going to say, mid to end of next week. But that's going to be a great one.
Yeah.
That's one I thought about.
Yeah.
But I'm very impressed with this guy's service records.
Yeah. And that just came back. It's just being detailed now. It's giving the Maria detailing process.
She's putting the screwdriver to it.
Yeah. Yep. She is. So that's a good one. Let's see. I started the counters last night. I've got the counters in, and I did most of the edging. And ripped down a whole bunch of granite tiles to 3/4 inch wide for the edge. And today,
but that was fun. I bet you were hearing real good after that.
Oh God, I want to tell you. And you know, granted, the last one I did was marble, and that was like a hot knife through butter. The granite, I'd forgotten how much physical effort you have to put into pushing that thing through. Maybe the saw blade is gone by, but
I guarantee the saw blade is gone by.
It did cut them. And it is done, and I glued the edging on last night, so today I'm going to have a sink. Kitchen sink, man.
Hot dog. We're almost there. When are we moving the fridge back in?
Pretty soon. I've got to do touch-up where the refrigerator goes. There was, for some reason, I taped the corner. I knew there was going to be cabinets in there, so I didn't go all the way to the ceiling with the corner, but I was about 5 inches shy, so I had to tape the corner, and then there was touch up. So I'll do all the touch up at once, but I'll do that this afternoon probably when I'm done with the sink.
Yeah,
that'll be fun. Yep. And
so what else?
What else? Uncle Jimmy's chicken barn is up for sale.
That's a really good deal. Like, from the outside, it does look like an old chicken barn, all right? So it's going to need I would call, for the size of the building, I would call that a minor amount of love that it needs. It's actually really quite a solid structure on the interior.
Yeah.
I think with a minimal of effort, it could be made into something really...
Condos.
You know, it could be made into a boutique mall, or it could be... I mean, I guess you could make it into a barn dominium if you wanted to.
If you count the attic, which is... not finished in any way. Well, there's three floors, ground floor and two upper floors. 30,000.
Again, it's all very solid, all things considered.
Absolutely. 30,000 square feet.
I would call it more solid, to my eye, to walking around. You go up on the second floor, I would call it infinitely more solid than the second floor of, say, an antique store made out of a similar building.
Okay. And there is an attic, so it's almost 1 acre. Excuse me. Under the roof. That's unbelievable to me. And the price is, I think, $249. So I'm 5 acres.
$249.
With a separate building that my friend Jim was preparing to live. It was one of these sheds, excuse me, that you would buy. But he put it on a real a concrete foundation frost wall. He's got some plumbing in there. He was wiring it. He had finished it, and Jim did nice work. That's included. And it's got stream frontage and water frontage, 5.5 acres. And
actually, most of that lot is tall grass, which means it could very, very easily be bushwhacked and pulled down, and then you could go to work with it. You could do something with the space.
I know I mentioned it last week, but I'll mention it again. It's full of stuff, and because Jim
contents are included.
I'm sorry?
I just saying contents included.
Contents are included, and there's a lot of stuff in there. Jim was. Selling stuff like you would out of an old chicken barn. And you have to look. It's on realtor.com in Prospect, Maine. And it's quite something. I think, given the nature of the building, you need to be a little pre-qualified before you're going to get to look at it. In other words, you have to be a serious buyer. Because a lot of people... When I'm looking at a building, I don't want to bother the realtor unless I'm really serious. And some people take looking at houses for sale as kind of a hobby. But you know, if you're not a serious buyer, don't waste somebody's time. And in fact, this one in particular, we have been in there. Peter and I have been in there multiple times, and we've spent time. And I think to really look at the building, like if you were going to buy it, you're good 2 hours going through every.
I would say if you, and as far as the contents go, I think you could make a pretty respectable chunk of, of the purchase price back if you really went through and sold them. And yeah, I mean, not even a crazy high price. Like you'd be selling it at prices that are a deal for the buyers.
Yeah.
And you could make a significant percentage of what you spent on the whole thing back from that.
Yeah.
You could almost just turn it into, just open the doors and call it a store. Not quite, but almost.
Not quite. But there's photos. So you get an idea of what it's like if you look at the photos. And it is, it's an interesting property for the right person. And I always felt that a building like that lends itself to incubator space for small businesses. Now, that would be a lot of work to get that done. But, you know, if you're starting out a small company, let's say you're making heat storage tanks for solar collectors or something, or wood boilers, that would have been a good building for us.
Well, I mean, it's not... Well, yeah, you know what? I would agree with that, actually.
Yeah,
I mean, it's solid, it's dry. It needs to be closed up a little bit, and it needs insulation.
Any idea what the property tax burden is for the chicken barn? I know it's on the ad. It's not crazy money. It's well under $5,000. I want to say it's under $4,000. I think it's in the threes, if my memory serves me correctly.
And hop on the listing. It'll tell you what the tax.
Yeah, it's realtor.com, and it's right. All the info is right there. Prospect, Maine, and it's an interesting property. And just looking at the pictures is fun. That's the way for me. I mean, instead of wasting a realtor's time, you get a pretty good idea. Unless they don't include pictures, I'm always kind of upset. Like if somebody has a really crummy property, and let's say it's $49,900, and they have two pictures of the outside. Well, okay, show me some pictures of the inside. It's $49,900. I know it's going to be funky, but let me see how funky it is, just so we don't waste our time. And
that does give you a feeling for whether it's going to be a knockdown or it's going to be or if you could get away with gutting it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's $50,000 properties out there that you could get away with gutting it and rebuilding on the structure, but you kind of got to see both the inside and the outside to get a vibe for that.
Yeah.
I went and looked at a foreclosure last Sunday, and it's overpriced for what it is. Every building has to come down, and it needs $10,000 in tree work before you could even start. You know,
yeah.
There was no interior pictures. You know? Which is funny because the front door is off the hinges, so it's not like it's hard to look at the interior.
You remember the one we looked at that had the 3 feet of water?
All the doors had been stolen.
Well, the one that had three feet of water in the basement?
Yeah. It had two sump pumps going nonstop. Water was physically pouring in through. Now, were you there for that?
No. I'm thinking about a different house, but you're talking about the one in Winterport.
There was a house I went and looked at in Winterport, right? And it very obviously, somewhere up the road from the house, a water line had frozen and popped because there was water pouring in through a wall. Like, literally, like a waterfall, it was coming in through the wall. There were two sump pumps running nonstop. There was probably a foot and a half of water in there with both sump pumps going.
Yeah.
And if you went outside and looked, suddenly when you get past that house, the cracks in the street have ice coming out of them, you know?
That was something. I did a drive-by after you told me about it. I'm like, oh, my God, that's scary.
And I think the listing or the listing agent or somebody said, oh, that's from all the rain we've been having. I'm like, I don't think that's groundwater runoff. I mean, this is, like, literally pouring in like it's a water effect, like somebody built it and included it intentionally.
No, the house I'm talking about was in Stockton Springs, and you and I went in through the basement, I think, and there was a whole bunch of water. It's like 3 feet of water in the basement, and somehow we were inside the house too, and everything was covered with mold. So it was, and the house was gutted. I know the people who own it now, and they gutted it and did a really beautiful job of restoring it. It wasn't beyond hope, but it was a hot mess.
Yeah. So. It bugs me, and this is not applicable necessarily to everything we're talking about, but you know what really bothers me is when there's a house, it's vacant, but you know it's owned by somebody somewhere. Mm. Maybe somewhere else in the state, maybe some other state. They own the house, they're not doing anything with it, but most specifically, they're not maintaining it. I cannot stand that. It drives me insane. There's a house right up in Prospect, actually, that I'm thinking of right now.
Mm.
Got a light on all the time. Nobody's in it. Somebody owns it. And you can just see it slowly but surely becoming decrepit, and you know there's moisture issues and there's some rot going on, and they just don't do anything. You know, it's not hard to maintain things, you know?
Yeah.
You go up maybe once every other month or just have somebody swing by or keep ahead of it. It's an investment.
Before I forget, I mentioned it last week that I had a banjo on consignment at John Bernunzio's. And I had them ship it back to me, and I said I was going to sell it for what my cut was going to be from Bernunzio. He takes the 30% cut. I'm not going to do that. It's in the office now. It's hanging there. You're looking at it, I'm sure. And it's a nice banjo. I'd forgotten how nice the banjo was.
That banjo's not in the office, Dad. Oh, wait, is that it?
Yeah. I took the one that Maria broke a tuning button on home, which is in the kitchen right now. Your mother wanted to know why it was in the kitchen. But the that banjo is $675, which is probably more than, or excuse me, less than what the parts are. But the important thing is it looks really good. Got a brand new neck. And it sounds, I forgot how nice that sounded. And it's hanging right there opposite Pete, and he'll be there till 3 today. And you would love nothing better than to sell a banjo for me, wouldn't you, Pete?
I would love to sell all 5 of these banjos.
Okay. We could do a package price for somebody.
If they want all 5, yeah, we'll work something out.
Yeah.
Sure. You
could
open your own banjo store.
That's true. I'll keep you supplied,
you
too.
You could be the supplier. You could be the power behind the throne.
Yeah. Yeah. So
customers are like, where are all these banjos coming from? You're like, don't worry about it. I got a guy.
Yeah, I got that guy. I actually started going through some of my boxes of banjo stuff and in the barn and organizing some this weekend because I have the urge. Maybe it's springtime. The sap is rising or something. But the urge is there to get started again. And, you know, I got some of the projects that I had stopped when we bought this house, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, "Oh man, that's going to be a good one."
So, we got to insulate that space because it's going to get awfully warm, awfully quick.
It is, you know. Yesterday it was kind of breezy and cool down where we were. The upper floor of that garage is quite comfortable, even a little too warm because of the roof surface area. So first floor is cold. Second, because I'm in the first floor cutting the wood for the countertop, and then I got to go up the stairs, then I got to go down the stairs to go into the house. It's kind of a screwy setup the way it's done. But downstairs is cool. Upstairs was hot yesterday. So, yeah. We got to insulate that. Yeah, that's another project I'm looking forward to.
What about in the second floor of the house? How warm or cool is that?
That's okay. It's cold. Like this morning, it was cold up there. And it doesn't overheat when the sun is out because there is some insulation there. There isn't a lot, but there's a little bit. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got the phone ringing there? Or is that my phone
ringing? The phone is not ringing here.
Okay, it's my phone ringing.
Oh, wait. No, I just beeped.
Okay.
Well, why don't I hop off because we're almost out of time anyway.
All right. Well, Pete, we'll see you in a little while. Thank you for calling in. And
yep, we'll see you.
See ya. And we'll kind of wrap it up here. My phone is ringing. How about that? You know, nothing more distracting on a radio program than having your phone ring. I usually don't have to shut it off, but that was an office call. I got notification. So, all right. Well, look, somebody asked if the house with the 3 feet of water was in Belmont. No, it was in Stockton Springs. And someone else said, a nice property in Prospect, lots of room to load up things like banjos. No, that's even too big for me. But it is the right person. You got to be a young person with a lot of ambition. I'm not a young person. I'm not sure about my ambition anymore. But we're gonna wrap it up. It's been a busy week. There'll be a new video up, hopefully within a day or so. And I'm going to be owing you another 2 pretty quick here as we really start to wrap up a lot of the kitchen projects. It won't be completely done, but it will be functional. And that will be a major, major step. And then I think I'm due a really good couple days off. Anyway, you have a great week. Enjoy the weather such as it is. And it is May. It is June. No black flies for at least a little while. So we'll accept that. See you next week.
Peace. locality. D doesn't interest me. Love the life that I lead. I've got a pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles, one little miracle a day is all I need. Tea rubbles more or less, B or the me, I guess, when the sun doesn't shine. But there's that pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full